Thank you and welcome to Scripture on Creation. I'm Scott Kump.
And I'm Dr. Ben Scripture.
Dr. Scripture, you recently asked listeners to send in their questions with the incentive that if you use the question on our program, you'd send them a copy of the little book about beetles, Things That Creepeth. And you got a bunch of responses.
We sure did, Scott. So I'm going to address as many as I can today. Let's hear the first question.
Okay, now this is more than one question, but they all came from the Sawyer family in Patrick, South Carolina. One of the parents writes, Dr. Ben Scripture, I enjoy your radio show. I actually went to one of your events in Florence, South Carolina about 5 years ago. My kids and I have some questions for you. Jamie asks, if Noah took two of every kind of animal on the ark, how do we have more than one breed of dogs and cats? Then Isabella, age 7, asks, how do tigers get their stripes? And Corbett, age 9, asks, why do sharks have an unlimited amount of teeth? Thank you for your time and God bless you. Sincerely, the Sawyer family.
The first question from Jamie, who I'm assuming is the parent, is wondering how we have so many breeds of cats and dogs if Noah only took two of every kind of animal on the ark. First of all, Jamie, there's an important variable we don't know, and that is, what exactly did the dog or cat kind look like before the flood? By that I mean, maybe Noah would have considered, let's say, an animal that looked like a wolf to be a different kind than a hound-like dog. Even though we categorize now both as canines, which is what most baraminologists would call the dog kind.
Baraminologist, you better explain what that is.
Sure. A baraminologist is a person who studies organisms to determine which species alive today most likely have come from the same created kind. Bara means created, and min means kind. So baramin means created kind. And there are a number of creationists doing this work. They mainly approach the research genetically. So, we don't know, as far as I know, if God created a wolf kind, and a hound kind, and a terrier kind, or if there was originally just a canine kind from which all the different varieties of canines came. But whether there were several or just one canine-like kind, as Jamie noted, there are a whole lot of breeds of dogs or canines today. Far more than we would expect were on the ark. So how did we get so many? The answer is natural selection to some extent, but mostly intentional or human selection. When God originally created the kinds, each entire population of that kind would have had a large assortment of genes, producing traits unique to that kind. Far more genes than any one individual of that kind could express.
Okay, I have to stop you and ask another question.
That's good, Scott. If you have a question, I'm sure many others have it too.
What do you mean a kind would have more genes producing traits than any individual of that kind could express?
A simple example would be eye color. An individual has one color of eye. But other individuals of the same kind, or even species for that matter, can have a different eye color. So, although one individual doesn't express every trait, if you put the entire population of that created kind together, all the genetic information God created as part of that kind would be present. But in addition to that, an individual can carry several genes related to some trait that are not expressed, even though that individual has the genetic information.
So you're talking about dominant and recessive genes.
That's partly it, although there are actually other genetic variables as well affecting the expression of genetic information, and it gets very complex. But anyway, we then ask, how did a basic canine kind on the ark result in so many breeds of dogs? Well, the genes in that canine pair on the ark were not all expressed, but the genetic information was present. Then, when those canines started reproducing, their offspring expressed slightly different traits as different genes were expressed. If one trait, let's say a thicker coat of fur, was advantageous in a particular environment, that trait would be selected by nature, and the population of that kind in that area would develop thicker coats as a whole, where in some other environment, maybe short fur was better. That is called natural selection, and it's the keystone of Darwinian or more accurately, neo-Darwinian evolution. The thing is, neo-Darwinian evolution attributes far more ability to natural selection to produce the expression of different traits than what we can actually observe in different species. And new information being produced is never observed. But the intentional selection of traits by humans is very successful, and the number of different breeds of Canis familiaris, that family dog, is a tribute to man's ability to selectively breed dogs with the desired traits to produce varieties from Chihuahuas to Greyhounds.
So in that example, it was people who controlled the breeding so that only little dogs mated with other little dogs, thus you get entire litters of little dogs.
Exactly. So, how could one pair of one Baramine produce so many varieties? It's because God created within each kind genetic information that could produce a wide variety of traits. And Isabella's question about the stripes on a tiger has a similar answer. A tiger gets its stripes by the patterned expression of dark and light pigment in the skin. So dark hair grows out of the darker pigmented skin, and the lighter hair grows out of the lesser pigmented skin. But it's interesting that smaller cats and other small striped animals don't have the stripes in their skin, just in their hair. Now, how does the hair or skin of a tiger embryo develop into stripes as it grows into a baby tiger? That is one of the great developmental questions developmental biologists and geneticists are trying to figure out. The differential expression of pigment or hair is a fantastically complex process. How is the expression of genes regulated spatially? So that in one growing section of skin, dark pigment is produced, and then right next to it, lighter pigment or different colored pigment is produced. It's a puzzle biologists are trying to figure out, and another example of just how wonderfully complex God's work in creation was.
And how beautiful it so often turns out to be.
Indeed. But moving on to the Sawyer family's last question. Most people probably don't consider sharks' teeth beautiful. However, when you learn why sharks have unlimited numbers of teeth, you may just change your mind.
Well, I think a shark tooth can be very pretty. Haven't you ever seen a shark tooth necklace?
Hey, I didn't say I didn't think shark teeth were beautiful, but I'm fairly sure most people's reaction is based on staring into the mouth of a shark with its rows and rows of teeth.
Oh.
And their initial reaction is not, "Oh, what pretty teeth you have."
I suppose you're right about that.
But let's talk about those rows of teeth. Because rows upon rows upon rows is the answer to why sharks have unlimited numbers of teeth. Scott, do you remember what a Rolodex is?
Oh, yeah, it's the old-fashioned contact list, address cards.
Paper address cards.
That's right, paper address cards attached to rings on a tube that you would write a person's contact information on and arrange the cards alphabetically.
Mm-hmm.
So to find the contact information, you'd roll the tube with the cards on it until the name and address you were looking for came up.
And they work great. But they are antiques now.
Yep.
Little Isabella and Corbett would have no idea what a Rolodex was. But Scott, your excellent description of the Rolodex helps answer Corbett's question. You see, a shark has a strip of tissue along its jaw that grows teeth. And just like your fingernails keep growing out, the tooth will roll out as though it were on a little Rolodex when the one in front of it is lost. So, knock a shark's tooth out, and another rolls out to take its place. And then another tooth grows in behind it, just like your fingernail keeps growing. And another fascinating fact about the number of teeth is, the row of tooth-producing tissue has a set number of teeth-growing follicles in it. So, as the shark gets bigger, and so its jaw gets bigger, the number of teeth in the row doesn't increase, the size of the follicles producing the teeth increase. So, the shark's teeth get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Wow, Rolodex teeth. So man wasn't the first to come up with that idea either. God is always the first to invent a clever mechanism.
Well, as the famous astronomer Johannes Kepler said, science research is thinking God's thoughts after him. So with that, I want to thank the Sawyer family very much for their questions. And Scott, let's hear another question.
Okay, this one is from Ludwig Johannen. We don't know where he's from.
So no Beetle book for Ludwig.
That's right. Sorry, Ludwig. We have no idea where to send it, but we still like your question.
Right.
And here it is. Dr. Scripture, you were talking about the blind cavefish. Do you think God might have given them echolocation like bats, or the ability to smell if either is possible underwater? Or could God have given the blind fish an extra perception like blind people get or have?
Let's first explain he's referring to a program we aired about a type of fish that lives in caves and they have lost their eyes. They're totally visually blind. However, they are able to thrive in the caves. Now, I'm not going to go back into how they lost the ability to produce eyes, which we talked about on that program, but I will talk about the research on how the fish are able to navigate in total darkness and find food. To address Ludwig's question, did God give the fish the ability to use echolocation like a bat? The answer is no. That would require a whole complex apparatus of sound production and detection. It would require nothing short of a special creation. And God doesn't do that with nature now. He did it all in the first 6 days of creation. And of course, though the theory of evolution would claim that by chance mutation and natural selection, those cavefish could evolve echolocation if you gave the process enough time, they are not developing any structures like a bat has to echolocate what is in its environment.
But, Dr. Scripture, don't some fish have the ability to use echolocation?
Well, not technically fish, Scott, but dolphins and some whales do. But what researchers are learning about the blind cavefish is they are using a detection device similar in principle to echolocation, but it's not with sound. They rapidly pulse water through their gills and out of their mouth, setting up vibrations in the water that bounce back to them, and by sensing the returned vibrations, they detect where things are around them. So, they've figured out a mechanical way to affect the environment around them, and then with a heightened sensitivity to the vibrations in the water, they assess their surroundings.
Which is, in some fashion, what Ludwig was referring to when he asked about sightless people having heightened senses.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, people can develop other senses far beyond what most people do in order to compensate for a loss of sense, like sight.
Yes, and again, that's not God creating something new in that individual. It's that individual developing a capability that already exists, but is usually not used.
Well, we thank Ludwig for his question, and we've run out of time, Dr. Scripture. I thought all those questions were interesting, and in each case, the wonder of God's creative genius, as well as his creature's ingenuity, was at the root of each answer.
Well, that's a good observation, and I think an encouragement to everyone to keep asking questions. You don't have to ask me. You can search things out for yourself as well. But I am happy to address your questions and will always endeavor to do so with biblically and scientifically sound answers. Now, we're certainly not kings, but I think Proverbs 25:2 can still apply. It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. And that's not what I say, that's what Scripture says.